It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. With the gods, nobody was.
Welcome to hour two of the show. So we had an interesting segment of callers in the last segment. So if you want to call in, 713-780-3776. I'm going to get to Texans news. Not a lot. I mean, Sean didn't even play the horn. Neville Hewitt is back. Their special teams ace, backup linebacker for the Texans. They re-sign him, and we'll see how important Neville Hewitt is with the new kickoff rule. Maybe special teams aces will be a bigger deal than just on punt coverage. So Neville Hewitt back with the Texans. You don't really want him playing linebacker. That's not where his strength is, but making an impact on special teams is where you can look for him to be pretty good. So, I mean, if we want to place an importance on that signing, they bring back a player who can contribute, then that's always good. So that's the extent of the Texans news, really. And anything that happens, it'll be probably of that level until the draft and, I guess, the uniform unveiling. I mentioned in the MyBookie spot that the tournament is back. And CBS Sports has ranked the Sweet 16 matchups. And thankfully, I guess if you don't love upsets, you've got a lot of big name teams because, for the most part, you had plenty of chalk. We know North Carolina State is the one outlier. Thanks to DJ Burns and others, they're going to play Marquette, a team that the Cougs would face. Well, the winner of that matchup would face the Cougs if they can get through Duke on Friday. Sean, of the Sweet 16 matchups, just thinking about it, maybe pull it up if you're not sure. Which one excites you the most, and where would you rank it?
Of the Sweet 16
If you can exclude it being the local matchup and just look at the matchups, like Purdue versus Gonzaga, you got Arizona versus Clemson, you got a rematch of the title game with Connecticut and San Diego State.
I won't be picking that one, don't worry.
You've got North Carolina and Alabama, Tennessee and Creighton.
I think Illinois, Iowa State's interesting, because it's kind of a clash of styles. Illinois gets up and down a little bit more. They have two awesome scores. And meanwhile, Iowa State plays basketball basically with a 2x4 in their hand. They're just trying to beat you up. They're just trying to play defense and do all that, you know, all the stuff that it seems like all the good college basketball teams do, which is make the game unwatchable.
Get the ball up on the boards, rebound, putbacks, so on and so forth.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So that one, just as far as not only is it a clash of styles, it's a two versus a three matchup, and they're two strong teams. And then Houston Duke might be number two, may even be number one, but number two if you're trying to take out the locality of it.
Okay, well, CBS Sports, according to David Cobb, one of their writers, he does rank those two as his top two, just in different orders. He's got the Cougs versus Duke as the best matchup of Thursday, Friday, and then Iowa State and Illinois following that. We've talked about it before jokingly about the physicality and what it might mean for Duke. I like Houston here, and excluding a potential bias and less about me liking Houston and more about me hating Duke. Pushing that bias aside, I don't think Duke, watching them play, has seen anything like they're going to see. As long as the Cougs can stay out of foul trouble, and certainly when you're playing Duke, who knows how that'll go. I just think how Houston plays, their ability to defend, I think they'll give Duke's guards trouble, and I don't think Filipowski's going to enjoy the experience. And not just Juwan Roberts. He's just gonna see a lot of bodies, and if the Cougs are allowed to play like they normally play, it ain't gonna be a good time for Filipowski or the Duke backcourt. It's just obviously a guy picks up a couple fouls or shots don't fall. It can change.
That's the thing. Is I also like the Cougs in this matchup, but. And this kind of, like, sucks as analysis, but it will kind of come down to the whistle. I feel like it will come down to what the refs are calling in that game. How physical are they going to allow the game to get, especially against Duke, when, you know, like you said, you have Roberts, you have even just like the guards on the perimeter, like how physical is Shedd and Cryer and Sharp going to be able to guard people, or when they come down and swipe down when Filipowski is posting up, trying to get the ball away from them. How much are they going to call? Are we going to have a replay of the last game we saw the Cougs play, where you have Texas A&M shooting 48 free throws and you have three starters foul out for U of H?
Yeah,
it was a lot of starters fouled out.
Four players overall, yeah.
Four overalls fouled out for U of H. Just how the game is played, because Texas A&M couldn't quite capitalize on all the opportunities that they had at the free throw line, and just by virtue of the Cougs being in constant foul trouble. But I believe that if Texas A&M couldn't capitalize but get the game into overtime, Duke is much more likely to be able to just win the game outright.
Yeah, and can the Cougs protect their defensive backboard? It's been an issue. Can they keep Duke off the glass? If they can do that, and like you said, it's not great analysis and so in depth. But if
it's
you can
true.
If you can keep them off the glass and stay out of foul trouble, I don't think Duke wins.
Yeah, I think how it gets called matters the most out of like any, I don't know, like basically any game, at least this weekend, probably any game of the tournament.
Yeah.
It just matters what the refs are going to call and what they're not going to call. Because if they call it a certain way, Duke will also get 50 free throws.
Yes.
That will happen.
And, you know, Duke will travel, but it's in Dallas, so there'll be a lot of angry Cougars.
Yeah.
In that building, because if Duke has got a parade to the free throw line, like if one team's going to have a parade to the free throw line, we expect it to be Duke, and you're going to hear a lot of boos very early, particularly coming off what happened against A&M. The Cougs got to hope for a bit of a friendlier whistle, and I think let's just say, I won't say that it's quote unquote cheating or favoring Duke, but if it's a game where you can play to your normal physicality, I don't think Duke wins this game. I think the Cougs wear them down, but that is yet to be seen. So we'll see how that plays out on Friday.
Yeah, I'm not even like taking into account like they're going to favor Duke. It's just the way they call the game might favor Duke. It's not even malice. It just might be that they're just calling foul. They're in a foul calling mood that night.
You are a foul calling son of a so we'll see. It's unfortunate that's the level that we're talking about it as, but they play two different styles, and the whole old adage styles make fights, and the Cougs fight style is one where they want to get in you and make it difficult for you to operate. And that can't be hampered by foul trouble, because despite being able to pull it out, as Sean said, against A&M, I think that concerns, particularly when you have guys foul out, will be an issue against a more talented Duke team. I'm still not going with Seth Greenberg, who thinks Duke will win. I'm taking the Cougs. I think they learned from what happened last year, and learn is probably a little bit too harsh. They played a team who shot the ball really well. I don't think Duke's guards are as good as the Miami guards they saw last year, which I think benefits the Cougs as well, even if the Cougs aren't as deep or talented as they were last year. So that game's on Friday. It is not even the latest game on Friday. I know some people were trying to wonder and see when that game will be played. It's 8:39 locally, and then Creighton and Tennessee follows them on True TV. The Cougs do get the CBS game. Of course, Duke's not going to get pushed to True TV during a Sweet 16 game. That's the benefit. If you were going to have issues searching for True TV, don't worry about it. You're playing Duke. You're going to be on CBS, and you'll get to see your potential Elite Eight matchup in the first CBS game on Friday. You've got North Carolina State and Marquette. And Tyler Kolek's a really good point guard. I know Jamal Shedd is the one we know here, the one who could win Player of the Year. If they see Marquette, you're going to see a pretty good point guard. They play in different styles, but we talk about guys who could give the Cougs trouble in the backcourt. Tyler Kolek is one of those guys for Marquette. And Sean's going to be could be excited. He could see Shaka Smart. Not that seeing Shaka Smart on television is such a big deal, but a face people in this area will recognize. Shaka Smart is the head coach of Marquette. So if he does beat NC State, and of course if the Cougs can beat Duke, you're going to see Shaka Smart coaching on the sideline. And Shaka Smart is known, at least I know him, for being the sixth defender for Marquette. He spends a lot of time on the actual court, even when his team's playing defense. I'm like, at any point, is the referee going to tell him to get off the floor?
I was going to say, you're not going to see him exclusively on the sideline. You'll also see him.
You're going to see one of those Jordans.
See him on the court.
You're going to see his, like the left Jordan, depending on the court playing defense. I was watching him in the Big East tournament not this past season, but the year before. And I was like, is anyone going to tell him to get off the floor? And no, they didn't say a word to him. And this is not even like if he's there down there when they're playing offense in the second half. Okay, whatever. It's weird. But he's got to be a bit of a distraction when you're thinking about having to navigate the guy on the court when you're trying to run offense. But nothing is said. And apparently there are no complaints by other coaches.
There's complaints.
That would be my first thing. Get him off the floor.
There's complaints, but there's like it's one of those things where other coaches also do it.
True.
So you can't like fully.
Yeah, they do it. Like Dan Hurley's loafer might be straddling the sideline, but Shaka has a whole foot on the floor.
Yeah, he does. He basically closes out on shooters in the corner.
Yes, because he does mimic that when he wants his guys to close out and be sound and have their arms up. He does the same thing. The only problem is you can't be the sixth man because that's not allowed. But apparently it is. The Big East doesn't care. And really, overall, the NCAA officials haven't warned them. I haven't seen them be warned about it at all. We haven't talked a lot about this story. We'll talk about it on the other side. Dak Prescott's going to be a free agent, at least according to all reports. The Cowboys aren't giving him a deal. It speaks to where we are with that franchise and what you think about quarterbacks and can they help you get to the next level. We have a younger, cheaper quarterback here who, by all accounts, everyone believes in. But at points, people believed in Dak too until the failures kept stacking up on each other. Now, the guy who I believe led the league in touchdown passes last year isn't under a deal. Well, he is under a deal for a year, but no extension talks, and apparently Dak Prescott will be a free agent in 2025. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about falling in love with the quarterback in the draft because this guy is recently out of college, and Sean Mapes is locked in on college quarterback competitions. We'll talk about that, too, when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. Earlier this week, and I think I first saw it from Ian Rappaport, that the Cowboys and Dak Prescott aren't discussing an extension. He's going into the final year of his deal. He's coming off leading the league in passing. I think he threw for over 4,500 yards, and we know how it ended because it always ends this way with the Cowboys. Disappointment. This one in particular was really harsh. They win the division, and Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers go in there and dominate them. They lose that game. Their team who wins 12 games every year, really well, at least the last 3 years under Mike McCarthy, but they top out at the divisional round, and sometimes it's a wild card. Just like this past season. So the question is, and it's not even about can Dak win a Super Bowl, because I mean I'm going to start with can he win playoff games to get them to a title game. That has not been something he's been capable of, whether it be under Jason Garrett or now under Mike McCarthy. I just think it's odd because of how quarterbacks are usually treated, where they don't even allow them to get to this point. Usually there's an extension, and particularly with the younger quarterbacks. Now Dak's older, so that might play a part, but we know Kirk Cousins has done this a couple times, bet on himself, and he's a great businessman. Lamar did it and it worked out for him, and I understand the Ravens' reticence to give him a major deal at the price point he wanted, considering how injured he had been over the last couple of years before this past season, where they had the best record in the AFC. But Sean, I guess I'll ask you this. Not a question of whether Dak can win a Super Bowl, because is it his fault? I don't know. I think he's a better quarterback than Brock Purdy, and Brock Purdy can make a Super Bowl. I think the Cowboys have organizational issues, namely Mike McCarthy, that might play a bigger part. But knowing the resume of Dak Prescott, knowing that you're going to win a lot of games, would you risk letting him go?
It's very tough, because he is right on that line of he gives you dependable, kind of good enough, not just good enough, but like good quarterback play versus being in the absolute wilderness. Like you might be the Atlanta Falcons.
You want to be the Giants? Like, think about the teams. Obviously, Jalen Hurts is fun, but the division that has the Giants, the Commanders have to draft the quarterback. They've been dealing with Sam Howell, among others.
Mm-hmm.
You have a legit winner as far as the regular season is concerned. Now, of course, the ultimate's the playoffs, and that always determines guys' legacies. I think it's an interesting gamble.
It really speaks to what are you all about? Like, are you about win the division, win 12 games, like you mentioned, and we'll see in the playoffs. Maybe we either get a good draw or just something clicks or whatever, and we can make a run. Or are you, this guy obviously isn't, you know, and all these guys are AFC guys, but he's not Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Stroud, Lamar. He's not one of these guys. So next, give me someone who can be one of those guys for us and just by himself lift us to the NFC title game.
Yeah.
Like, not even lift us that far. Just lift us to the NFC. Lift us to somewhere Jared Goff has been twice now.
Yeah. Let me give you a scenario, because let's forget about the 2025 draft and say the Cowboys don't have a great year. They let Dak walk a free agency, fire Mike McCarthy. They want to start over. And then they look at, I don't know, I guess who the quarterback would be, Shador Sanders, or maybe your guy. Not even that he's really your guy. We'll talk about that. Quinn Ewers.
Starting quarterback.
Yeah, certainly your starting quarterback. Quinn Ewers. Let's say they have their eyes on them or someone else that is has less name recognition, that's a pretty good college quarterback. Let's say they decide, hey, Vikings, we'll trade you, Dak. You can pay him whatever you want, and we want your two first-rounders because we have our eyes on who everyone McCarthy loves apparently right now, J.J. McCarthy. Are you giving up Dak and the likelihood that you have to pay him, or you're going into 2025 with a new quarterback, a rookie possibly, for J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix or whatever, whoever you love in this draft? Are you doing that?
That's the thing. When you actually say, so I'm trading Dak Prescott for J.J. McCarthy.
Are you doing that?
I'm not.
This is what I'm thinking about as far as the Cowboys are concerned.
And that's what I'm saying. Where, like, you let Dak Prescott walk because they're going to win enough games to where they're not going to
be a top.
They're not going to have a top pick.
Yeah.
And so you then become the Atlanta Falcons drafting Desmond Ridder. Like, you become the Steelers drafting Kenny Pickett. You
don't want to be that team.
The team that is desperate for a quarterback, but not in a position to actually draft not even a difference maker, just someone you could talk yourself into being a difference maker. Because like we've seen with the 2021 draft, all these guys were in the top 10 or top half of the draft at least. They're all in different teams now, or they're Trevor Lawrence. Who's good?
Maybe he's good. I don't know if he's good.
Who we might be having this conversation about when his next contract comes up. We might be having the same Dak Prescott conversation about Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah,
it's what is your appetite for? Let's try this guy.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 2025 mock. What can I offer you? Some Shador Sanders or Carson Beck or Quinn Ewers as opposed to signing Dak to a long term extension? You want to restart the roster with a new coach and one of those guys, or get rid of Mike McCarthy and hope Dak elevates or the team elevates because you have a good quarterback and a better head coach?
It is such a hard question that I think I land on do not pay Dak Prescott.
So you would rather
do not pay him his next contract.
Do not pay him and then hope for Shadur's hope, and you won't even be in a position to draft the guys I just mentioned.
It might even be a like veteran stopgap for 1 year.
That is,
and maybe you try to trade for, or maybe you try to find like your Kirk Cousins or your Russell Wilson.
Are those guys better than
or your Matt Stafford? Like you try to get into disgruntled star quarterback market.
You fail with Dak, and you go, hey, Arizona.
Yeah, Kyler.
Kyler, because Kyler
the area.
Is Kyler better than Dak Prescott though?
I think that can be.
That's the flip. You're going to have a new coach who thinks Kyler's good enough to win. Listen, and get rid of Dak?
None of these are great answers.
That is why I find this such an interesting thing that they're willing to play this out, apparently.
All of them you can go, okay, so you want my plan. It's like, oh, okay, so Kyler Murray, that's your fix? Or a mid-round quarterback? Because that's what they've done. Forever, it seems like. They replaced Drew Bledsoe with a guy who was drafted in the sixth or seventh round, Tony Romo. And they replaced Tony Romo with a guy who was drafted in the fourth round with Dak Prescott. And I don't know if you can keep doing that. I don't think you can keep doing that.
I don't think you can hit that many times on those type of picks.
Exactly. And the way, I mean, also, you haven't exactly had like a ton of success hitting with those guys.
That's
like,
true.
They've been hits and they have not been enough.
It's Cooper Rush season, I think.
Or Trey Lance season.
Is that who they're going to?
So you can poke hole. Keep Dak Prescott, and then it turns into, you want to pay Dak Prescott $50 million a year?
That's
what it becomes. Like, all of these are bad options, or at least options that have a very strong downside.
You give in your opinion, I'm giving mine. I'm paying Dak and firing Mike McCarthy and hoping and praying that the next guy you pick is not a Jason Garrett, Mike McCarthy type that can elevate and be a great coach that helps the entire roster. And Dak can be his solid and actually very good self regular season-wise. And your coach takes you to a level where Dak Prescott can't be considered a detriment to your winning in the playoffs.
So that would be the Belichick or Vrabel
or even the Kyle Shanahan model. But Dak's
a better quarterback.
I mean,
just someone who's available. Like yeah. The coach that is available.
Sure, maybe you go Belichick. Maybe Belichick's the Dallas Cowboys coach. But the thought of Jerry Jones ceding control to Bill Belichick makes me laugh. I'd love to see it happen, to see if they could coexist. But that's my mode. I'm not dropping Dak for, like you said, a mid-round guy, because you're not going to be bad enough to draft high, or trading for Kyler Murray or someone else. I'm saying you're stuck, Cowboys, and hope your coaching hire makes a difference. Oof. That's all.
Oof.
But
and you got to pay CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, well,
gonna have to pay Michael Parsons.
You got to pay people. You got to pay people. I understand.
I'm just saying, you got to pay those guys and Dak.
I understand it's cost prohibitive. I understand why you might want to get away from it. But if you're gonna do that, you might as well make a trade now. Trade him now for picks, so you can either be really bad this year. You just go with Cooper Rush if you like a really good quarterback in the 2025 draft, or you'd get into this draft because I don't think. Waiting for a guy in the second or later is going to help your cause. But we ain't the Cowboys, so we ain't really got to worry about it. I just thought it was an interesting thought experiment. Neither one of us cares what happens to the Cowboys.
It is interesting. Yeah, it is interesting because it is the most like rock in a hard place kind of thing where you can just go, really? That's your plan?
Yeah.
And no matter what the plan is.
We would be the guys everyone hates. Oh, that's your plan? Do you have a different one? No, but that's your plan?
Or my plan is equally as like, ugh.
Yeah, it's not better than yours, but yours I know is terrible.
It involves hopefully you get lucky and are in a position to draft the next Will Levis in the second round. That's my plan.
Woof. Will Levis. I mean, Jeremy Branham notwithstanding, Will Levis being your plan is terrible. It ain't Dak Prescott level of concern if you're a Cowboys fan and he might be leaving. But I do want to talk about what's happening at Texas, mostly because of the fans. I mean, from all accounts, and we'll talk about it when we come back, Quinn Ewers will be the starter. But Sean and others, seems like they hope it's a different guy. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
Before we get to the Quinn Ewers stuff and some other college football things that we're interested in, the lineup is out for the Astros, been out for a little bit now. It'll be the Astros, their lineup against Nestor Cortez will be Altuve, Alvarez, Tucker, Bregman, Abreu, McCormick, Diaz, Pena, and Myers. And, of course, Fromber is on the mound. So the lineup we all saw coming comes to fruition. Yordan as the two, Myers as your starting center fielder, and hitting ninth, and Pena in the eight hole. So we're about 2 or 3 hours away from the opening pitch, a little over that. I think it's a 3:10 start, I believe, is when Fromber throws the first pitch, because baseball, can't start at three. It's either been 3:07 or 3:10. Baseball always has weird times, but 3:10 is at least a round number. But that is your opening day lineup, and it probably will be the lineup you see on most days when all those guys are available. And we'll see how dynamic Joe Espada is when it comes to his lineup, or maybe it'll be relatively something that we see all the time and very consistent. So that'll be determined by, I guess, performance. But that's the lineup as the Astros try to get off to a good start as they face the Yankees, which I don't think has a lot of juice. I know it's the Yankees, but it's hammer and nail. Until the Yankees prove a threat, other than just rooting against something from New York, I don't feel like there's a lot of juice there. I mean, we beat up on them all the time.
Yeah, it helps that it's the Yankees. That helps.
I know, yeah, because the New York thing, I get it. You hate the New York thing. You hate all the attention the Yankees get. But all the Astros do is beat them when it matters most. The Yankees could sweep this series, and all they're gonna. I mean, they're delusional, so their fan base will go crazy. But all you gotta do is point to the moments where you felt the same way, and then the Astros ripped your soul from your body. But we'll see. It begins again at 3:10 here in town. I mentioned Sean and his love of a Texas quarterback. He texted me yesterday out of the blue about a conversation he was having with one of his friends.
I just thought you would enjoy the peek inside the curtain.
So it's a tweet from a CJ Vogel. Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning throwing to Isaiah Bond and Jonte Cook. You know, it's a 10-second clip of watching those guys throw against the air. And whoever this is, who you know, just commented, Arch is better, LOL. and you said, was Quinn's even a completion? I didn't see the video. This is where college fan bases are at. They're throwing against air. And I responded with, yeah, but Quinn was going against the first team all air defense. So you can't judge him. He was going against the best air defense out there. This is where college fans are at. Like, this is something that'll go on throughout the year. Quinn Ewers was the quarterback of a playoff team. And Texas people Texas fans are still having this conversation about where's Arch? Where's Arch? Arch is better. Quinn Ewers. Yes, there are some concerns, but I just want to point out, Quinn Ewers was Arch before Arch, as far as expectations. But, you know, people are star effers, and he's got the Manning name, and so that means more, despite the fact that everyone was depressed when he decided to pick Ohio State. But now, a couple years later, which, once again, involves a playoff appearance, you're still talking about Arch Manning. And Arch Manning wasn't even the backup quarterback last year. He wasn't good enough to beat out Malik Murphy, who saw the writing on the wall. I'm getting out of here because at some point, either they're going to run me out of town or they're just going to give Arch the backup job no matter what. So he left. I think he's at Duke now. You have a playoff-caliber quarterback. And yet?
A quarterback that played in the playoff.
Oh, see? That's hate. That's hate. Nothing can be said about that, but that's hate.
No, I mean, I mostly just like to have fun with it and just poke and prod at it because Quinn Ewers is not so good that he's like unimpeachable.
But Sark has said starter, right? That's all. Yeah. He's the starter.
Yeah.
Until a rough half against Michigan, we'll see, right?
Yeah.
Are you secretly hoping?
Can't say healthy.
There you go. Are you secretly hoping that you're in the game in the first half, but he throws like two picks, and Sarkisian makes a call because he's forced to, and because he can't let the rest of the team down? Be honest.
I'm not hoping for that.
What is it? Part of the math for you that hey, he throws a couple picks, but the defense is playing great. No. You know, Michigan's lost a lot of guys. They're still in the game, but he's throwing picks.
I'd love for Quinn Ewers to do nothing but raise his draft stock.
That's a lie. That's a lie.
I know.
You're hoping that game against Michigan, where Michigan's lost a lot, they're in the game, but Sark has to make that tough call. He's got to make the tough call and bring in Arch. Don't pretend like that's not part of it.
That's not what I hope happens.
You wouldn't mind it, though.
That's not what I hope happens.
He wouldn't mind it, ladies and gentlemen.
That's not what I hope happens.
I didn't say you hope. I've pulled back the hope.
I want to have a stress-free, just, you know, yawn, 15-0, win the national championship.
With Arch Manning as the quarterback.
With whoever. I'm a team guy. Whoever at quarterback.
You kind of want to be validated for your opinion that Arch should be playing.
So that video that I sent you, or the screenshot, I guess, of the video that I sent you, that tweet has since been deleted.
You think the Texas Mafia got after this kid?
Because I wanted to look in the replies to show that I'm not alone. So you're not alone. I went to another CJ Vogel practice video. This one is just Quinn Ewers throwing to Isaiah Bond a deep ball. No defense
against
to be
there.
Found. And literally all the comments are Bond pulls up that he's got to get fixed. This is an interception, the SEC, underthrown. Just every comment, that's a pick with the DB cover.
I will reiterate, he was the quarterback of a team who made the playoff. And yet, even in practice reps where nothing matters, he is getting criticized.
Quinn Ewers lost us the championship.
Oh, by the way.
Deep shots are ass.
Oh, by the way, I want to point out, he was throwing deep balls against an SEC defense last year on the road, and they were just fine. But the practice ones are getting people upset.
When people ask, why didn't Ewers declare, even though he's eligible, please show him this video and his high school arm and timing.
The guy was dropping dimes to Worthy and A.D. Mitchell in Tuscaloosa, and yet the practice clips. You know what lost you the game against Washington?
Fumbling.
That and Mike and you couldn't
the refs cheated.
And you okay, let's get into all the excuses. I was just gonna say you couldn't stop Michael Penix, but sure, let's get into all the conspiracies you want to talk about. The refs
I actually don't think the refs cheated.
The refs favored Washington over Texas in a game?
Yeah. It was the all first team air defense.
Yeah, and the problem was there were 11 Texas guys out there, and they couldn't get stops when it mattered. But
Michael Penix looked better against actual defenders than Quinn Ewers does against air.
That's really good. That's really good. So you're first team hater is what I call you.
No, I just like to have fun with the hating.
Sure, but you're in on it though, and you welcome it. And this is what Quinn Ewers has to deal with. Hey man. You made the playoff, but that don't matter. We got Arch behind you. You know, the guy who was playing against, like, little kids in high school. You watch Arch highlights.
Don't demean Catholic school football, please.
I'm not saying New Jersey Catholic school football. I'm talking about what Arch was playing against.
In a league that produced Odell Beckham and Peyton and Eli Manning, among others.
I didn't hear you mention any defenders. Which is what Arch was going against. I saw the guys he was stiff arming. Those guys were playing in the band at halftime, and then they let them play because they don't have enough players.
Those kids are going to have. They're going to go to D1 schools.
Sure, not to play sports though.
Well, you know they're going to go to D1 schools. They're going to be at so many LSU games this year.
I'm sure plenty of those kids will wind up at LSU watching whoever the backup is at, whoever the new starter is at LSU this year. Is it Nussmeier? Is he still there?
I think so, yeah. Sure. Let's go with Nussmeier. Give him the job.
I hope not, for LSU's sake. But before we go, I wanted to talk about more hate. If you want to call it that, Prince Amalemilian, I hope I got that right, he is a transfer from Florida. He's now at Ole Miss. And he was asked about his experience. You know, you want to always want to talk to the new transfers, the guys who made headlines going from one school to the other, particularly when he was at an SEC school. This is Princely, discussing the transition from Florida to Ole Miss and what he's learned.
My attack in the run game a little bit, but I feel like here I'm getting coached harder for things like that. You know, I feel like at Florida, like the way I was coached, it was kind of like, it was almost as if like they was just telling me to go out there and use my talent, if that makes sense. But here, you know, Coach Lou and Coach Joyner, they really on me about the little things, you know, attacking the run. Coach Lou really goes through the progressions of the drops and the routes that are being run when I have to go into coverage. Like when I was at Florida, it was like they would just tell me, go drop to this area, and I would have to figure out everything else on my own. But here, you know, they go real into depth. I feel like I'm actually getting, you know, developed here.
And that's the banger. I actually feel like I'm getting developed. If you aren't as big of a nerd when it comes to college football as myself and Sean are, coaches sell development. They sell, come to our program, we'll develop you. They start to list all the guys they've helped either win all conference awards or get drafted. This is what you're selling. And at Florida, under Billy Napier, hasn't been a great run. So all he can do is point back to maybe his time at UL, and not Louisville, Louisiana, and talk about who's done well, the guys that got into the league. If he probably can talk about, I don't know if he was there for Robert Hunt. Robert Hunt was a guard at slash tackle at and was a Raging Cajun, just got a big deal from the Panthers. So all you do is talk about when you don't have wins to sell is development. And when one of the guys who you coached and recruited said, you know what, I don't get developed there. It's the banger. It'll be something everyone recruits against Florida with, and certainly what Ole Miss will tell you. That's an SEC school that doesn't develop. Come here, we'll get you to a spot where you understand the defense. It's not just about your talent, and we'll get you ready for the league. So I don't know if I want to call that hate, but it is a shot across the bow when it comes to recruiting. And, you know, maybe Billy Napier agreed because he had a first-year DC last year. You know what he did? He hired someone to help him. He hired and I love the official title for the new guy, Ron Roberts, who Napier is familiar with because Ron Roberts worked with him at Louisiana. His title is Executive Head Coach for Defense, Co-Defensive Coordinator, and Linebacker Coach. Those are a lot of titles for a guy who's supposed to hold the hand of the guy you hired last year. That's what he's there for, because the guy you hired was the wrong one. You don't want to fire him, so you just hire a guy you're familiar with and knows can get the job done. I'm glad it happened to Florida. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch. We got one more segment to go. I do want to talk about Kelly Oubre. He had a moment last night, and we'll talk about him on the other side.
Loaded, ready to rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. Short on time. You heard a promo for what's happening on Friday, but what's happening next is Gallant and George going to be out at the Decoy following this show. And also, the Killer Bees will be out there too. So if you want to head out there and enjoy the Astros season getting underway, you can also get $10 Shiner Bock 100-ounce towers and $2 Mexican candy shots. You just go watch the Astros and hang out with Gallant and George and then the Killer Bees out at the Decoy today as we celebrate opening day. I mentioned Kelly Oubre before, or at least in the last segment. I want to get to him before we go to the break. If you missed it, if you were just focused on the Rockets, understandably, I get that. But another game going on at the same time was the Clippers and the Sixers. The Clippers are struggling. They went into Philadelphia, were down big early, fought their way back, and Kawhi Leonard took over on the offensive end and on the defensive end. If you don't think fouls can be called late, because the Sixers would disagree. A couple drives by Kelly Oubre resulted in defensive plays by first Kawhi on a block, and then Paul George on what was obvious to be a blocking call. It was, you know, the law of verticality, except it wasn't straight up and down. Sure, his arms were up, but he moved from point B to point A or point A to point B and blocked off Kelly Oubre. No call. The officials, even at the end of, at the end in their pool report stuff, said, yeah, we should have called the foul. Of course, if they don't make a call, there's nothing to review, which is weird with the officiating. If they don't call it a foul, then they can't take it back. So the Sixers lose the ball game. They really need it as they wait for Joel Embiid to come back. And because of the non-calls, Kelly Oubre went off on the officials. People who could read lips did a great job of trying to speculate what he said. You guys remember Stephen A. Smith talking about Jason Whitlock? If you don't, here it is.
You bitch.
And that's what Kelly Oubre said to every official. And he didn't leave it at that. He said that, and then he said, your mama's one, your grandma's one, and your granddad's one. The question is, Sean, at the end of a game, how much do you get fined for verbal abuse to an official? Because it's not in game, and he didn't not leave the court in a timely fashion. All the things we hear about what gets a guy fined, he didn't get thrown out. But when you do that to multiple officials and then talk about the grandma, their mom, and their dad or whatever yeah. he got to, what are we thinking? Somebody said it's $25,000 per bitch. I think that's harsh because he said bitch a lot.
Should like your mom and grandmom
be one in, together?
Or does that like stack?
Or does
like,
he?
Does it count as more? It's like, whoa, okay. So the rate to call a ref a bitch is XYZ. But to call his grandma a bitch? Oh my God.
Do we go up to 35K?
Yeah, that's time and a half.
Now, we're only going by lip reading. Whatever, I don't know exactly what he said, but you could tell he called someone that. And how many times? He did it quite a bit. Do you just go verbal abuse to each ref gets you like 15? Because we don't want to hit him with 75, so we're going to hit him with 45 because he verbally abused each ref? Or do you think 25 per ref is a fair number? I don't think you should be fined 25 grand for calling someone a bitch, even if it is a referee.
Yeah. I think maybe like 30 or 40.
A total of 30?
Yeah, 10 for each ref.
I think that's a fair number. And then you disrespected one of their grandmas, so we're going to add a little extra on top.
Throw a 5 on top?
Yeah, a 5 on top.
Okay, so 35 is what we're up to.
And he also gave the refs a finger too.
This wasn't
in that tirade. It was before that he got caught on film.
Okay, but still last night?
Yes, it was last
night.
Yes.
Still last night.
Yes.
Okay.
He had a great night last night.
Oh my God. Man, I would hate to be the NBA having to decipher how much is a middle finger, how much, cuz there has to be something for when you do each of one of them individually.
Yeah, he pointed.
But I'm saying where if you just give a ref a middle finger, or if you just call him a bitch. But if you do it all in the same
combined,
I feel like it starts stacking up.
Yeah, a preponderance of evidence, we'd say.
You get a multiplier effect.
Yeah, Kelly Oubre, after a preponderance of evidence, we're going to hit you with the 60K because the finger, the multiple bitch.
Chill.
And then you talk about the grandma and their dad. We're going to hit you with the fine that encompasses all of that, and hopefully you learn your lesson. But go type in Kelly Oubre on Twitter if you missed it. He was on one last night. And then after the game, he talked about going to a chiropractor. So he had a lot of things to say. But it wasn't great for the Sixers. They lose a close one last night as Kawhi had a couple of and ones to end the Clippers' struggles, at least for a night, as they beat the Sixers in Philadelphia. That'll wrap up the show for us. As I mentioned, Gallant and George are coming up next, followed by the Killer Bees. Go out to the Decoy. Drink, eat, enjoy the Astros as they get their season started with hopefully a Framber Valdez great performance and a win over the Yankees. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
ESPN 97.5.